Blog Talk Radio.
Well, that got you woken up for a bang of music. We're trying new music this time on Education Talk Radio, and that was it. We may stick with it, we may not, but we think we woke you up. That's for darn sure. I'm Larry Jacobs, your host. Good day, everyone. Welcome to the 2010-2011 edition of Education Talk Radio, our first show this season. This is national and even international, because we do it over the web, international talk radio for the education profession, K through 12. And as I mentioned, I'm your host, Larry Jacobs. Let me welcome you again. Thank you for listening. For your reference, and if you'd like to tell others where they can listen to our show at any time, you can always find us and listen to all of our education talk radio shows at our radio blog. And the URL address for our radio blog is www.educationtalkradio.wordpress.com. And soon, just so you know this, Education Talk Radio will also be on iTunes, as well as always on the 700,000 visitor per month website, www.blogtalkradio.com. At this particular URL address, www.blogtalkradio.com/eedutalk. www.blogtalkradio.com/edutalk, which is E-D-U-T-A-L-K. You can always listen to our shows anytime you plug into that URL. Well, welcome again, and today we have a very special guest, Mr. Larry Humes. Larry is founder and principal of Humes and Associates, a consulting firm that specializes in strategic marketing and communications for higher education. Larry's based in Orlando. Humes and Associates is based in Orlando. Their website is humesassociates.com, H-U-M-E-S, Associates, one word, .com. And Larry's email, which I'll give you several times during the show, is larry@humesassociates.com. This should mix you up pretty good because there's two Larrys. Mr. Humes, are you there?
Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm fine, my friend. How are you today?
Doing great, thanks.
That's good. I'm going to ask you, as I ask every guest, because we do the show over the phone lines, please talk clearly and succinctly into your headsets or phone, however you're doing it, so everybody can understand every word and they can hang on every nuance that you bring to our subject today, which is basically a general overview, the status of higher education. Am I correct?
That is, I'll do my best.
And your best is better than what most people would call their best.
Well, we appreciate that.
Well, it's my pleasure. To Humes and Associates, how long has Humes and Associates been around?
We've been in business about 7 years, and I worked in higher education for over 25.
You want to give your quick resume? Because I always love that resume part.
Well, that's very kind of you. Yeah, I started in journalism about 33 years ago, I believe. But I've worked in higher ed, as I said, for over a quarter century. I was worked in the News and Public Affairs office at the University of Florida in Gainesville for a number of years, and then I was at a liberal arts college here in Orlando called Rollins College.
Which is an excellent school, by the way.
Thank you. It is a good school.
I have several friends whose children went there.
Oh, good. Well, I was there for about 12 years, and then I worked for a number of companies that specialize in supporting higher education technology. So,
and you know,
an interesting ride. Working in higher education is fun. Sorry?
I was just going to say that. You know, higher education has changed so much over the past, I'm going to say, 20 years. And we can talk about all kinds of things, for-profit institutions like Full Sail down in Orlando, like obviously the University of Phoenix, how the private schools are doing, the consortiums, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I want to start off, as we planned this show, Larry Humes, we listed a bunch of questions that I wanted to ask, and I decided to ask you the last question first, because it was the most fascinating one. And that question is, what does the average college student look like today?
Well, it's interesting, and I think it would surprise most people. And I would answer that by saying the average the traditional college student today is very non-traditional. USA did a poll recently, and they found that a third of the undergraduates today are over the age of 25. And 70% of them are considered non-traditional. And by that, I mean they're working part-time, they have their own children, or they're working full-time. They're enrolled part-time, working full-time, or they have their own children. So, you know, that's interesting.
75% are over the age of 25. Do you know how many are over the age of, like, 40?
I don't offhand. Most of them are going back to school. You know, they've mm-hmm. started their careers, and they've realized that they need more education, or they want to change careers. Interestingly enough, we're kind of in the best and worst of times right now. Higher education is countercyclical. So when the economy is doing poorly and jobs are scarce, people choose to go back to school and retrain or to update their skill set, and that's what we're seeing happening right now. National Center for Education Studies also did some research, and they found that over half of today's students, about 49% of them, are financially independent. They're paying their own way. They're enrolled part-time, and about a fourth of them have their own children already. So these are working moms who have and dads, largely moms, who decided to go back to school. They have full-time jobs, and they're, to a great degree, are taking online programs, and they may be studying at 1 or 2 in the morning.
Well, you do marketing. You're a marketing expert for higher education.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now kind of in an economic recession nationwide. You just said that education, Larry Humes, was countercyclical. How do colleges market these days?
Well,
or maybe it depends on the kind of college it is. I don't know, but I'll let you go on that one.
Well, yeah, it does. You know, community colleges might market themselves a little bit differently. But I think you referred in the beginning of our conversation to a lot of the changes in the last 20 years. That's certainly the case, and for a number of reasons. I think the for-profit institutions have really gotten a toehold. The University of Phoenix, Capella University, a lot of your for-profit institutions have kind of redesigned or revolutionized the way colleges and universities market themselves. Traditionally, schools would just open the gates and expect the students to arrive on campus. That
right.
doesn't hold true anymore, and largely because of online learning. Programs, you can now get a degree from the University of London or schools anywhere in the world. And the minute you have online programs, you become a global university. So the school down the street is no longer competing in its locality, its region. It's competing all over the world.
Let me stop you. Are more what's the percentage or ratio, I guess is a better word, of students that do online education, college students or higher education students? What's
mm-hmm.
the percentage of those who do online and get their degrees versus those who attend campus and get their degrees?
Well, that's,
that
very good question, and it's not an easy one to answer because a lot of students are doing both.
Well, just make up something. We don't know.
Well, let me answer it this way.
Okay.
Enrollment in the traditional classroom environment is pretty much stagnant. It has grown in the last couple of years, particularly, as I mentioned, because of the recession. But compared to that, online learning is growing in double digits. And so roughly a third of today's students or more are taking online programs, which is not to say that they're not also enrolled in traditional classroom environment. They're doing both. So they might be taking some classes in residence, but they're also taking some online programs from that institution or from other institutions. I work with a young lady who has a full-time job. She's here in Orlando. And she works for one of my clients, and she's getting an online degree from a school, I think, in Missouri, or it could be Kansas. So location, geography now is irrelevant. It's removed boundaries, geographical boundaries.
Let me ask you one of these stupider questions before we move on to some of the other things. But if more and more people are going online, is that less expensive for the student?
Well, of course, it depends on the institution, but I would say...
Well, even at any given institution, is it less expensive to take to get your degree online than it is to go onto campus?
It might be slightly less. And certainly, when you consider the cost of living on a campus,
mm-hmm.
and the residency and all that associated with it. Certainly, that's less money. The online courses might be a little more expensive than you think, but they would still be probably less than a residency, and for obvious reasons. If you buy clothing online, it's cheaper because than buying at the local store because they don't have to pay for
the utilities. There's no rent. There's no brick
and
mortar at the local mall.
Exactly. And that is why a lot of the colleges now are very interested in moving their curricula online because it doesn't require them to build new buildings and invest in the infrastructure to support that.
Well, let me take this another way, and let me ask you, this has always been a craw, as you know, because we've talked several times,
mm-hmm.
all right, that and I have nothing against the profession per se, but college professors spend very little time in the classroom for the most part, yet they're paid very, very high salaries. And my standing joke is you can't expect $140,000 a year or $90,000 a year for working 4 hours a week, 40 weeks a year, so to speak.
Right.
All right? So how does online education affect the college professor? Larry Humes, a strategic marketer expertise at Humes & Associates, how does this affect the professorships at colleges?
Well, I think if you ask a professor who teaches online, they will tell you that it is a lot harder than they ever thought it would be.
I would imagine it is. I would imagine it is because it's 24/7, so to speak.
Well, yes, not only because you're engaging the student, but your ability to monitor the student's performance and progression through that curricula is much more intense. Let me give you an example. If you teach in a classroom and the professor comes in the next morning and says, did everybody read the lesson? Then the heads nod and say, did you get it? And they all go, yeah, we got it. But in an online environment, the professor can, as the student goes through the curricula, he really, or if she is going through gates. And so the professor can go online, look at what the students are studying, how long they're on that in that environment. So he can come in the next morning or engage with the student in an online environment and say, I sense that you all are having trouble with Chapter 3. Is that correct? Everyone will go, yeah. So you have a better sense of what is the learning progression in an online environment because
mm-hmm.
you're able to assess their absorption of that material much, much better than you are in a traditional classroom. And the beauty of it is each student can progress at their own rate.
Now, what about the professors? Are they paid more for this incredible availability, which doesn't exist to that degree in the traditional university setting?
I don't really know the answer to that. I don't know if there has been any quantitative studies on paid, the payment for
mm-hmm.
online versus Red General. What you'll find, though, is most faculty are teaching hybrid. They're teaching both. They're teaching some residential courses, and they're also teaching some online.
All right. Well, you're listening to Education Talk Radio. This is Larry Jacobs, your host, talking to another Larry, Larry Humes, the marketing expert at Humes & Associates, which consults the higher education. A lot of us, Larry, listening, okay, we have gone to college, we're still going to college, or we have children in college, and we see tuitions increasing every year at a higher rate than other areas of our economy, which is something that drove me nuts. Why? Why, Larry Humes? Tell me why. Is all the money going into your pocket as a consultant?
Well, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
If it was.
Are you talking to us from your yacht in Bahrain?
Yeah, I wish.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is, and tuition is increasing at a much faster rate than a lot of other areas of our economy, and it's for different reasons.
And if I may, can I interrupt you for one second? One of
sure.
the things that has always bugged me, okay,
mm-hmm.
about tuition increases
mm-hmm.
is that all it does, I shouldn't say all it does, but it the bottom line is that it forces the students to borrow more money. So the tuition increase does not put any pain, so to speak. If you raise the price of tomatoes at your local store to $8 for 6 tomatoes, nobody would buy them. All right? But if
right.
you raise the tuition at a college, the student is just borrowing more and will pay back more in the end. The college, quote, unquote, my quote, does not feel the pain of that increase. And that's something that's always bugged me. So what's going on? I want to get into that.
Yeah. Well, it's supply and demand, and perhaps that might have been true 10 or 15 years ago, but remember, competition now is key. And actually, our population is at a point now where the number of incoming freshmen, number of available incoming freshmen, has stabilized and even shrunk a little bit. So there's increasing competition among the schools, and particularly with this online pressure, to capture the very best students.
So if there's more competition, the prices should be going down.
Well,
and
yes.
Let's just use two examples, and I'll use one that we had spoken about. Full Sail University is a fine university located in Winter Park, Florida, and they're an online university. Then, we have the University of Phoenix. Basically, they're in competition. Capella University, they're in competition.
Well,
so
no.
Should they be lowering prices?
No, let me correct that. Full Sail is actually a residential school.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you.
Yeah, that's not an
online
school.
Thank you very much for telling me that they do offer online courses.
Right, but
yes. Keep
in mind that the cost that schools are facing now is increasing exponentially as well for a number of reasons. Now, keep in mind that the budget of your average school, 75 to 85% of that is tied up in salaries, and so that's not negotiable. And faculty are tenured, so you can't just lay off faculty. You can eliminate departments, but it's a little bit more complex than it would be in a business world. The other thing is, if you think about it, most of your colleges and universities are 100 years old or older, and so they have crumbling infrastructures, buildings that need maintenance, and in tough
times.
Much
like the state of Massachusetts, where I'm broadcasting from.
Well, it could very well be. But deferred maintenance catches up. And so these buildings have to be improved and renovated, and that's part of it. And remember that your state, most of the states have suffered economically and have had to reduce, or at least limit, but in most cases reduce their allocations to their institutions. For private institutions, their endowments have shrunk considerably. Harvard University had to lay off a number of the staff who were responsible for investing their endowments. And those endowments help fund the financial aid that they provide their students. So both private and public have taken a hit in that way as well. So it's a combination of things that is really affecting universities, and they feel the squeeze of trying to get more bang for their buck and limit as much as they can tuitions.
You know, you're a marketing expert, Larry Humes, in the field of higher education. Just as an extension of that last question, do the colleges see a need to change the way they market in terms of price? I've never seen that anywhere. They'll talk about how successful their students have been. I've seen those ads. They'll talk about how beautiful the place is, where they are, et cetera, et cetera. But they never, ever talk about pricing. Is that taboo? And it's very different from other. I hate to use the word because it's really not, but from other commodities.
Yeah.
You know, how do you market? How do you market these things? You're the expert. If you're a college, and I'm going to ask you another question about college presidents, but if you're a college president, I'm sure you can list a whole bunch of things that keep them up at night. But how do they go about marketing at times like this?
Well, that's a good question. And
I'm the host of the show, and it should be a good question.
There you go. One of the things that's bugged me about higher education for years is they've really marketed based on their exclusivity. And that by that I mean the yield, what they call the yield. In other words, we'll receive 15,000 applications for our school, but we only accept 3,000 students. So you really have to be an exceptional student to even get in here. And that's the way most colleges and universities traditionally have marketed them themselves. And they've gotten away with it. But that, again, is changing because the environment is changing. School institutions like University of Phoenix, and remember now, University of Phoenix is not an online school. That's a residential school. They're just distributed in a different manner.
I did not know that. I thought they had a whole bunch of online courses.
Well, they do what we call hybrid hybrid courses, which are some of it is in the classroom and some of it is available online. their library is available online, but they're largely residential. So again, and
residential doesn't mean you sleep there. Residential means
no.
There for your classes.
Exactly. They usually move into an office building someplace
in
a metro area, and so they pull in on those people who are working and want to catch a class on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
But they have marketed in a different way, which is, we'll help you get that kind of job you want. And so they've taken the back-end approach, and they're really focusing on, we provide results. And that resonates with today's consumer, with the student, and particularly with the parents of the student who say, okay, what are you going to do for my kid? Are you going to get him a job when he gets out? That's what they're focused on. Full sale, you mentioned.
Does the parent act as a consumer?
When they go into a school
or when the kid applies to a school, or when you as an adult apply for a school, do you find that people act as the consumer, or do they act as though the college is doing them a favor by accepting them?
Well, more and more it's becoming shifting to the consumer.
By the way, I thought that was a brilliant question.
It was a brilliant question.
Yeah.
And a very good one.
Thank you, Mr. Kim.
It's becoming more and more consumer-driven. Now, parents play an interesting role, and you've heard about helicopter parents. They are more involved today than they were a generation ago in supporting
the
children.
I have to leave. My son wants more cream in his coffee right now. You don't mind, do you? Can you hold?
Right. Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, he's 22, but it's very, very bad with the pouring of cream.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Parents traditionally will set up the barriers and say, okay, you can choose from these three or four schools. And selecting a school for college kids, it's most kids choose the college they attend almost like they choose the clothes they buy. They make decisions based on where my friends are going, which athletic team I like. They make it for all the wrong reasons. The parents will tend to put up the barriers to say, here are three or four schools you can choose from, and then they let the child make the choice. But the parents are very interested in the outcome, and more the students, and particularly as, again, the traditional student today is non-traditional. They're working. They understand, the goals here, and so they're very focused on, what are you going to do for me when I get out?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Full Sail University.
Yeah, and only because you and I had never heard of them until yesterday, as you know, and I'll just explain to the audience, and I wrote you because I found that they were in Winter Park, Florida, which is near you, and you had told me a little bit about them.
It's a two-year school.
So they're on my mind. That's why I'm mentioning them.
Yeah, they offer associate degrees in a number of areas, largely around film, video production, audio production.
By the way, just so you know, what I saw them on, they had an ad in a education newsletter that comes in on email, and it was about getting a degree in, which is a hot degree these days, in education technology.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they've identified their niche market, and the point I wanted to make is they have a number, like two dozen, I think. I could be wrong on that. But they employ a number of placement staff who do nothing but help their graduates get jobs in the industry. And that's something that that they market, and they do it very well.
You know, there was a show on, I think it was Frontline on PBS, and this was about, I'll say, 2 months ago, and it was about the promises made by the for-profit colleges in terms of jobs and how in many, many cases those promises do not come through. Now, of course, I'm not saying that's the case across the board, et cetera, but it made for good TV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you find that what they're saying about getting you a job is pretty true these days?
Well, that news coverage followed the Senate hearings that were held a month ago, and the Senate conducted a hearing into online universities, diploma mills.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how effective are they? My take is that most online programs today are valid. They're good.
Mm-hmm.
There are some institutions or schools out there, if you will, that overpromise and mislead. I didn't go so far to say as mislead, but I would say they are in the minority. Remember that most of these schools have to become accredited, and for anybody going to any school, they need to go to an accredited school. because if they're not accredited, then they're not their diploma doesn't mean much. And
so that's something that's actually something that a consumer, which people rarely act as when they're talking, they need to know that if they're choosing a school that's less known than some of the.
Absolutely. That should be a key question. Who are you accredited by? There are some accrediting agencies now that specialize in online curricula, and they have measuring metrics for measuring how effective online programs are. And they look at graduation rates, and they compare the graduation rates of students in online programs compared with paralleled with residency programs. But they have a number of ways of gauging and measuring the effectiveness of online programs. So the fallacy is that online programs aren't as good, or you don't learn as much as traditional classroom. That's not true. We're seeing a number of studies coming out all the time now that are showing that online programs are just as good, if not even better.
I assume in this day and age you're allowed to text in your term papers.
Certainly.
That was a joke, actually, but I think you're leading to something that's real.
Well, it's a little hard for the dog to chew it up now. You know, the excuses are less.
My cell phone fell out of my pocket and flushed down the toilet. I can't possibly turn in my paper now.
I guess we have to come up with new excuses.
We do indeed. This is Education Talk Radio. I'm your host, Larry Jacobs. We're talking our guest today, Larry Humes, founder and principal of Humes & Associates, which is, as you're learning, a consulting firm that specializes in strategic marketing and communications for higher ed. And if you want to talk to Larry or email him, it's larry@humesassociates, H-U-M-E-S, associates, one word, .com. And his website, again, is humesassociates.com. Larry, besides not being able to hire you because you're so busy, what keeps college presidents up at night these days?
Wow. What keeps them up at night? Well,
besides Mrs. College President.
Yeah, that's true.
Or Mr. College President.
Very, very possible. Yeah. Well, the budget pressures, as we've talked about before, that's one thing. Security. Essentially, they are the mayor of a virtual city, when you think about it.
With
their own police departments and so forth. They worry about things like Virginia Tech, what happened there. All sorts of incidents, 24/7. It's an environment that, you know, they have to keep secure, and they're responsible for, you know, the safety of everybody that is on that campus. So for them, that's a concern. And along with that, I think the technology is a concern. You know, they maintain technology systems that contain a lot of PII, personal identity information, so security numbers, that sort of thing. And there are constant attempts to breach those systems. It is not uncommon, for example, for a college to get as many as 10,000 security breach attempts a week.
10,000 a week?
10,000 a week. Because you have to remember that.
Well, that's because they have an excellent computing department.
Well, hopefully they do, and they have firewalls.
The kids quickly learn how to hack in.
Well, that's it.
Students,
you know, for them it's a challenge to see if they can hack in, but not just students. There are people in other parts of the world that try to take over the computer. Not only are they trying to access the PII, which they can sell, but they also try to take over the computer. So if I can hack into your computer, I can control it. And if I can control 1,000 computers, and that's what they try to do, then they can target, say, a bank or a defense system, a country, and they can create access of denial. And so all of these computers trying to access a point at the same time can shut down a system. So we've seen banks that have temporarily had to shut down. We've seen systems where this denial attack has taken place and taken them offline for a couple hours, air traffic control systems. So that's a constant fear, is how do I maintain and protect my data? And I was working with one client who had a security breach, and I reminded them it's like the door
this
to your
a,
house.
This is a university. This is a university or community college or college of some
yes,
sort. Higher education.
Right.
Right.
It
yes.
was a community college, and the metaphor I used was it's like the front door of your house. As long as you have a door, you're subject to a burglary, and you can put a firewall and a security system in place today, but they'll come up with a way around that system tomorrow. So it's not something you can fix and walk away from. It requires 24/7 maintenance to ensure that that doesn't happen. So that's another concern, I think. Security and budget
that
probably.
That seems to be number one on the college president's mind, the way you're explaining this. And that's who your clients are. So what's on your mind? What's on your agenda? What do you think about Larry Humes?
Well, that's interesting. I think for presidents, they think about, you know, we used to talk about the three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic. I think for presidents
and that's
now,
interesting because arithmetic starts with an A.
Right. You figured that out,
which goes to show you how stupid that statement is.
Exactly.
Right.
Which meant they should have improved on their reading.
Exactly.
But I think for presidents today, it's all about revenue. It's about recruiting.
Another R, reading, writing, arithmetic, and revenue.
Don't confuse me.
All right.
Recruiting and retention and revenue. Those are the three R's.
So we rank other three R's. Recruiting?
Recruiting and retention.
Those
are the big things.
Recruiting who?
Students.
Students or recruiting faculty and people?
Oh, no. Faculty, you know, pretty well takes care of it. Well, I mean, there's effort in that, but, you know, that's a different environment. But not only recruiting students, but recruiting the very best students. You don't want just students. You want the premium the merit scholars, if you can.
Can I say this a different way? Is recruiting the same thing as sales? Do they approach it as sales?
They don't like to use those words, but yes.
Of course
absolutely
not.
Absolutely is. Yeah. I would say more marketing. And I think most colleges now are comfortable with marketing. You'll find that people that had titles that I had a few years ago now are called marketing officers. So that's a common term. So it's recruiting.
So consumers, it seems to me that the consumer, the future student or the current student, what they really want is results to come out of this for their money. Basically, they want a job, a profession, a career. Correct?
Many of them do. A lot of students go to school for the same old reasons, which is meet girls, have fun, go to ball games, you know, that sort of thing. And that's a big mistake a lot of kids going to college today make, is the goal for them is to get into the school. After they're there, they don't know what to do. They've met their goal. Right?
Oh, so you met my son.
So the experience from there on out can be a downhill slide if they don't readjust their goals.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be beyond getting into that school. It's got to be getting out of that school, you know, with some skill set.
Okay, so when you do your marketing approaches, because you're a marketing consultant, Larry Humes, to higher education, your marketing, if I'm hearing you correctly, the key thing is to recruit students.
Yes, recruit the kind of students who will do best at your school. Going back again to the full sale analogy, they know the kind of student who will do well at their institution, and so they know how to market to that student. I was in Boston in your backyard a couple of years ago visiting one of my clients, and I was at an intersection, and the cab driver was in his early mid-20s. And so here I am, and there on each corner at this intersection, three of the four corners, there was a really good higher education institution. On each
welcome
of the
to Boston, yeah. Welcome to Boston.
Exactly. Right. And the kid says to me, where are you from? And I said, Orlando. And he said, ooh, my school is there, the school that's just right for me. And I said, don't tell me. Full sale. And he said, yes, that's where I went. So here's the school that really knows its niche and markets to it. So, yes, recruiting students, but recruiting the right kind of students, the best students they could get. That's important. The other thing that has become
By the way,
more,
does Full Sail refer to themselves, their Florida base, as FSU?
No, that would be Florida State.
I know it would. That's why I was thinking it was kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
Same
I don't think Florida State would like that.
No, they wouldn't.
And I wouldn't because I have a daughter going to school there, so I wouldn't encourage that either. But, joke.
I know. They're laughing. You just can't hear them laughing.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. I'm laughing on the inside. The other relevant point there is the retention. They realize it's vital to hold on to the students that they have, and not just to recruit them, but to make sure they're they're being successful and that they're meeting their objectives.
And, you know, that's a common thing because, you know, the kids do these college tours. The parents take them all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And they pick their school basically based on a one-day visit. And, you know, with the parent, always, I think we certainly did, and the parents, I think, across the board, well, if you don't like it, don't worry, you can always transfer.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and what do they do to retain? You're the marketing expert for higher ed. What do they do to retain students? What do?
Well, you have to you have to constantly talk to your students, your consumers, if you want to call them that, and find out what the needs are. Schools do a pretty good job. A lot of schools do a good job of meeting the academic needs of students. They don't do a particularly good job of meeting the social needs. And that brings up a point. You ask why the cost goes up. Because the content has gotten mixed up with the context. And that's what's driving up the cost. And let me explain that.
Please
schools today know that to look sexy, to really be able to appeal today's college student, they have to have some really nice-looking buildings and facilities, right? So they build these beautiful student centers with lots of glass and fast food restaurants and that sort of thing because they know that appeals to the students. Or they build these new wellness centers and so forth. That all gets mixed in.
Right, which
with
looks
the
like
content.
The Museum of the Sultan of Brunei. These
yeah, exactly.
Moments.
So
yeah.
So that becomes part of driving up that cost is if we're going to be able to retain recruit the kind of kids we want, we're going to have to dress this place up and build these kind of buildings. So mixing that context in with the content is what helps drive up, is which drives up the cost. And that, again, is the advantage over the online because I don't have to worry about fancy buildings when I'm offering content online. I'm really focused on this course, this program will get you a job. And you can get degrees now online, complete degrees.
Oh, without
all your coursework.
Sure.
Yeah, in a variety of subjects.
But it's not as much fun as going to a football game in a raccoon coat and singing Bula Bula.
Right. You know,
perhaps
I think
I'm showing my age when I say that.
Yeah, you and me both. I think it's important to note, though, that residential schools are never going to go away.
No.
They're always going to be there. They're always going to, again, fill that niche. It's an increasing market. It's a changing market. And so it's very, very interesting, very dynamic in that sense. But you asked me a question about what's on my agenda.
Yeah.
I think for instead of...
As a marketing expert in higher education.
Right. For me...
Not that you have to go to Publix later today.
No, of course. For me, it's the three A's. Accessibility, affordability, and accountability. You know, President Obama has put forth this graduation initiative by which he says he wants to see America graduate 5 million additional students by the end of the decade. 5 million. Now, if you add up the number of schools we have right now and look at the ability to take on that kind of increase, they can't do it. So it's going to have
to be... How many graduates are there now in a given year? You know? I don't know. I mean, they throw out the number 5 million,
yeah.
But how many are there now? Are there 4 million now? Are there 20 million now? Are there
300,000
now?
It's estimated right now there are about 12 million students in America enrolled in classes today. Half of them are going to community colleges.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, 12 million. So he wants to add an additional 5 million to that. And... The way we're going to have to do that is accessibility. By that I mean for the kid that's living a distance from a school, he can't afford to drive 40 miles every day to go to a residential campus. Online learning may be an alternative for him. Tennessee Board of Regents has an online program that's excellent, and it really is a great program. Courses can be created at one institution within the system, taught by a professor at another institution to a student in another part of the state.
Accessibility
is important. We have to be able to meet the consumer where the consumer is.
That's
affordability is the other one, and that was a key point you brought up.
Yeah.
As you know, the financial aid industry has completely done a 180 in the last 5 or 6 years.
It certainly has.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've taken... I think, and rightly so, They've taken the banks and the financial institutions out of that process. They were the middleman. Years ago,
bless their hearts.
The government said, the Department of Education says, you know, we're not in the financial aid business anymore. We're backing out. The banks rushed in. That's changed. And so they've been backed out, and now, you know, we've gone to this new business model. I think that's good for the consumer. But at the same time, these kids graduate with huge amounts of debt, and we've got to figure out ways to make learning more affordable for all Americans, for all individuals, if we want to meet this initiative. And then the third one.
Affordability, was there a third A? Okay.
Well, accessibility, affordability, and the third one is accountability.
Accountability.
Accountability. You know, when I was a reporter back in the 70s.
And by the way, a published author, I might add, several novels.
Right. We didn't have higher education reporters. That was kind of uncommon. Maybe the New York Times did, but the average daily newspaper didn't have higher ed reporters. Higher education gets a lot of scrutiny today, and it should.
Yes, it
should. And the public has a lot more interest in how colleges do what they do and holding them accountable for what they're providing, which is a good education.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to hold them responsible for maintaining these standards.
Accountability.
Yeah. So those are three values, tenets that I think going forward, if we're ever going to meet this initiative, and I think we should. You know, the United States, at one time, we led the world in the number of 25 to 35-year-olds.
But we don't anymore.
No, we don't. We're ranked 12th. And we're actually ranked 12th.
We used to lead the world in healthcare, and we're 17th in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is the reason behind Obama's push on this.
Yeah,
is because
fat and lazy.
We've slipped.
Yeah,
well, we
yeah.
slipped in knowledge and technology, particularly a number of areas. Certainly, you know, automobiles and things we're familiar with. But we're slipping in a lot of the sciences, and we need that kind of leadership if we're going to maintain a world power. And So it's, I think, important for us to move in that direction. I think those are three values that will help us get there.
Well, thank you, Larry. One other question before I leave you today, Larry Humes. Students and their parents are always looking for the right, I shouldn't say the best, but the right college or university to attend, which would be the best for them. What advice? Give them from your perch as a higher education marketing expert.
Right. You know, I get that question a lot from friends who have children who are getting ready to go to school.
Yeah.
And the thing I tell them is don't focus on the school. Focus on the interest. You know, they think, well, if I could just get into Harvard, things would be great. Well, maybe not. For example, if you want to study marine archaeology, maybe Harvard doesn't have a sound program in that area. Every college has every college has three or four departments that are truly outstanding.
Correct.
And so if you have an interest, even if you don't know what your title is going to be when you grow up, if you have an interest, science, education, whatever, ask around. Find out the top five or six schools in the country that are known for that department or for that discipline, and then focus your energy in that direction. When you do the tours, get off the beaten path. They'll walk you around, show you the best buildings, and the best faculty and so forth, but slip into some of the class buildings or residence halls if you can, or even administration buildings. Look in the bathrooms. How well are the buildings kept? How do the grounds
look? What a great idea.
Stop faculty off the tour, or students, or staff. And when I worked at Rollins, one of our best recruiters was a gardener, and he would help people carry their books to, the bookstore.
What a great comment.
He was. Time after time, people say, that gardener guy over there, he's wonderful. He just made us feel so home and so forth. And I told him we ought to put this guy in the admissions staff. He's great.
Yeah, he is on the admissions staff. He's just being paid as a gardener.
Exactly.
Right.
And everybody has a role to play.
That's some great advice. Great advice.
Good.
Thank you, Larry. Why don't you give everybody your phone number? You do that rather than me, your contact information.
Well,
let me introduce Larry Humes, our guest today, president of Humes and Associates. You're on.
Thank you. Well, you gave them my email address, and that's the best way to reach me because I'm online almost all the time. It's Larry@HumesAssociates.com. And my phone number and all that contact information is on my website at humesassociates.com. They can find it there.
And, Larry, you have been a wonderful guest. Will you come back and join us someday in the future?
I would be delighted. Thank you, Larry.
And we would be delighted to have you. I'm going to leave you now, but I just want to say thank you while you're on the line. You have a great day, okay?
My pleasure. You too.
Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Larry Humes, president of Humes & Associates, with just a kind of an overview of what's going on in higher education today. Larry is a marketing expert in the field of higher education. His clients include many colleges and universities, and specifically community colleges, which are doing such a bang-up job these days, and I hope you enjoyed our interview. We'll be back with you soon with another show. Next week we'll have a gentleman on who's going to talk to us about document security, et cetera, in the field of education, policy security, document security software in that field. His name is John Connell, and I'll look forward to being back with you again. Again, my name is Larry Jacobs. You're listening to Education Talk Radio. Find out more about us at educationtalkradio.wordpress.com, which is our radio blog, and you can also listen to this show anytime you like, either there at educationtalkradio.wordpress.com or at the Blog Talk Radio site that we have, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/edutalk. And on that note, I'm going to say goodbye until our next show. I'm Larry Jacobs, and thank you for listening to Education Talk Radio.